FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, can you take the chorus stop? Transformers! Defenders of
truth! Robots who fight in disguise! Hello, everyone, and welcome to TFYLP, Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 248. I am your host, Duron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. We have a very special episode for you in this installment. Our very own Jim Black, a.k.a. Maroni Prime, had a chance to sit down recently and interview the incomparable Peter Spellos. You may know Mr. Spellos from the Robots in Disguise cartoon in the early 2000s as the Predacon Skybite. The following is that interview. Please accept our apologies with the quality of the audio in this episode, as our standard microphones could not be used. An attempt to enhance the audio has been made, and I hope that you are able to enjoy it.
Okay. Thank you for joining us. This is Jim Black with the TFYLP podcast, here interviewing the famous and wonderful Mr. Peter Spellos.
Greetings, everybody. How are you?
Known to you as the voice of Robots in Disguise 1.0, Skybite, Predacon General, and enthusiast of haiku poetry.
How true.
So, Mr. Spellos.
Peter, first of all.
All right, Peter. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you came from.
Grew up in New York City. First was on stage in sixth grade, like everybody else, you know, doing Pirates of Penzance, and then went to high school is really where I found that theater was a release of expression, didn't know, you know, I wasn't really athletic, but, you know, I found out that if you were in theater, you could communicate. It was an avenue for my expression, and I was a big comedy fan, so I wanted to be like Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy and all that stuff. But I also found that if you made the girls laugh, you were very popular. So I went, boys, if you're listening out there, make the girls laugh. Yes. Or the boys. Whatever you like, doesn't matter. Just make them laugh.
After the best medicine.
Absolutely. So that was it. And I went to college for acting. I got a BFA degree. And at 21, moved. I was in New York City. I moved into New York and started my career there, where I did improvisational comedy with the First Amendment Improv Company back in 1977 is when I started doing that. And my partner and I were the morning comedy team on WPLJ-FM, which is an ABC-FM radio station in New York.
Okay.
So it was terrific. And then at about 34, I decided I had to end my film and TV career, and I moved out to L.A. and was there for 23 years.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
All right. Your beginnings as an actor, once you got your BFA degree,
mm-hmm.
Where did you really kind of kick into the high gear and really get started, you know, good foothold into the business?
It really was the First Amendment Improv Company, because I knew I had done a little improv in high school, and I had done a lot of stand-up in high school with partners, so that had always been working for me. But improv was really the keys to the creative kingdom. Found that I'm fast, I'm funny, I'm big. You know, I was very physical back in the day. And I was performing with terrific people. And, you know, going live every, you know, two, three, four nights a week after a while was terrific. It really gave me the confidence to do anything. Because if you can make stuff up in front of a live audience, you know, they'll go, can we get a location? A doctor's office. Begin. If you can deal with that, then when they give you a script, that, you know, it becomes much easier.
Fantastic. All right. From that point, what was it, or why did you pursue the avenue of voice?
I didn't pursue voice acting. It pursued me.
Good.
I had done radio in New York, and when I was in California, I moved out there in 1989. My stuff was film and TV. That's what I was working. I was doing a lot of films and TV, and a buddy of mine called while I was on the set of FBI and the Untold Story and said, can you come in for an audition? I said, no, I'm filming. He said, well, call a director. We need someone for a role tonight. Call them up. I literally was standing at a payphone. You kids out there have to look up payphone now. And pulled a plate out of the garbage and I had a pen and wrote the script down that he wanted and did the audition on the phone. And booked it, and it wound up being a series called so long ago, Jim, Space Strikers for Fox Kids.
Okay.
Where I played, believe it or not, my first thing, a shark creature called Admiral Malco, and I got to say one of those great science fiction lines. I'll do it right to camera. Set a course for Earth, and I thought I'm doing voiceovers now. Well, I wound up doing. I had no idea it was a recurring role. Uh-huh. I wound up doing 12 episodes of this series. And the director asked me to audition for the next series, which was Battletech.
Yes.
I booked that. So the first two voiceover series I went out for, I booked. And all of a sudden, it was like, I guess I could do this. I'd also taken a dubbing course, and just to kind of get facile with that. And it took to it. You know, like, some people can ride a bike right away. It was just something I could do right away. Mm-hmm. And I just started booking from there. You know, it's a very small community, and people start to know you and bring you in for auditions, and it just kept going. It really was my secondary career with the film and TV, but I had never planned on becoming a voice actor. I'm an actor.
Sure,
sometimes
sure.
I'm a voice actor, sometimes I'm a film actor, sometimes I'm a TV actor, but the more you can do, the more they hire you for.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay, On that same note, how did you land the role of Skybite in Transformers Robots in Disguise?
I was working for a company. You know, I never know what names to mention, but I don't even remember what the name of the company was. But
I believe it might have been Saban.
I'm not sure if it was Saban. It was later, but I was working with Jamie Simone, who's a terrific director and producer. Mm-hmm. Just a great guy. And again, when you start to do this little community, they know what you can do. I always thought I was the worst voice actor in the group because they could do so many voices. And I basically did me and variations of the voice and could do a couple, but I considered myself more of an actor. You know, I never grew up doing impressions or anything like that. Jamie brought me in. He was the only thing I auditioned for was Skybite. He says, I got something for you. I really think it's right. I want you to audition for it. I did, and I booked it.
Nailed it on the first try.
I guess, you know. It was, but you work with these people, they always, this is such a tight-knit community, and they, people just know you, and it was very friendly, and sometimes I was saying before, they got 2 pages of dialogue for you, they got 2 weeks of dialogue for you, or they got a line. It really didn't matter to me, because I was doing what I love with really terrific creative people. You know, a lot of the actors in the series and the Transformers were also the writers and the directors of the session. Wow. And because of my improv background, the more weird I got, the more weird they wrote for me, you know, and let me go kind of berserk.
Sure.
And it was just a great time in the booth with those guys. It really was true.
So you were very much in your element.
I was, absolutely. You know, who wants a real job? When and I've had more than too many of those, and I just felt very fortunate and blessed. You know, Jim, my 23 years out in L.A., I did over 100 TV episodes and films, 40 different series. I became the man I said I would be, and I feel very, very, very fortunate that life worked out with me. You know, lots of highs and lows, but here we are in Indianapolis, teaching, which is my other passion, so that career afforded me this.
Outstanding. Do you have any funny stories or favorite memories from your time doing Robots in Disguise?
Yeah, I guess the one was I got into the booth one day, and I got to the script, and at the end it just said Skybite sings, and I looked. I don't remember who. So many wonderful people. You know, I'm going to name drop and forget people, but Richard Epcar and Steve Kramer and Kirk Thornton and Bob, I think Bob Papenbrook.
Wally Winger
and Wendy Lee. I mean, just people who were directing. I get too many years ago to remember exactly, they said, we want you to improvise. Mike Sorich, we want you to improvise. Okay. When it's my turn, because they knew I was improv. So when it came to the thing, I went, who's the greatest shark in town? Skybite, that's me. And they broke up into booth. And I swear on my life, every time I do a convention or something, somebody goes, sing the Skybite song. And I'm like, all right, fine, that's going to be my claim to fame, not a problem. But it was because, again, of my improv skills, and I had a blast doing that. I tried to channel somewhere between Tom Waits and Dr. Smith from Lost in Space for the character. You know, he was maniacal, but he had a good side and had the really gravelly stuff going on, so it was a blast. It was one of my favorite things I did in California, was Transformers. And at the two conventions, and now I teach in London twice a year with my Transformers family there, it really is a world unto itself. You don't know when you do something that there's going to be a popularity like that. I was born in 1954. Transformers movie came out in 1984. I wasn't even a Transformers kid. I didn't play with Transformers. I'm too old for that.
Sure.
You know? So when but I knew of it, and, you know, it was great anime. You know, great animation. It was fun. You know, robots. And this is really cool.
It's the Cabbage Patch Kids of its day.
I like to think it's a lot better than the Cabbage Patch Kids.
Well, sure. I'm just saying, you know, it was you know, an iconic.
Totally iconic. You know, I had no idea about the world of anime yet. That was as foreign as could be to me. You know, but it was. Transformers was such an American institution. And when I got to do my first BotCon in 2002, I sat next to Dick Gaudier, who was in the original cast. That, so sad he passed in the last year. But to me, he was Heine the Robot from Get Smart.
Yes.
You know, and when things were rotten, the Robin Hood show that Mel Brooks did on ABC in the late 60s. So, you know, we would sign autographs, and then everybody would walk away, and I would take that picture and go, Dick, sign that for me, you know. Because I think the best thing that I've always tried to stay in touch with is I'm a fan. I feel very fortunate to have had such experiences. And when I would go on a studio or a movie set, or if I'm on Paramount or Warner Brothers, I would take the moment and go, look where you are, son. Look what you did. And I feel proud about that. And again, I keep using the word, but very fortunate that I was able to have those experiences, you know, at this point in my life. To look back, my life sitting right in front of me there, it's pretty terrific. And by the way, some of those things you have on that table, I don't have a recollection of, you know, or the character itself.
Yeah.
Someone mentioned Mona of the Gale from Trigun the other day, and I went, okay, I'm going to have to look that back up. I really don't remember that.
Yeah, there's a buddy of mine that background from in Terre Haute, Indiana, in Paris, Illinois, that region, and his favorite character in Trigun was Mona of the Gale.
What's his name?
Arlen Johnson.
Arlen Johnson, thank you.
Now, here's a question. I know you said that you know, you didn't grow up with the Transformers, of course.
Right.
You know, you're just a year younger than my dad.
Ouch! That hurt. That went in really quickly.
Well, no. He's relatively young, but
boy, you covered that nicely, by the way.
Right. But I can't help but ask.
Ask away.
Do you own any Skybite toys?
Yes, both of them.
Excellent.
Well, and then I get gifted by the fans of Sky Bites. I have shark plushies that were made for me. Rebecca in France, I still have the shark plushies sitting up on my counter. Pictures, toys. I got one in my book over there that the kids made. There's a little Sky Bite sitting by my computer over there. It's really strange to have an action figure. You know, of course, none of us got a piece of the action, but to have one of
figures.
Those, but it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. The distinction of enough and plenty. You know, it's never going to be enough, but you got to know when it's plenty. You know, in this sense, I've had plenty. I've got an action figure. How cool is that? Just a fat kid from New York City who followed his dreams and wind up with an action figure.
Wow.
My life is good, Jim.
Now, what did you think when they revealed that they were going to come out with a new Skybite toy?
And by the way, this is not product placement, so I'm covering the label right here. I thought it was great. You know, there's plenty for all of us. I had my shot at Skybite, now somebody else does it. I don't know even who did the voice of the other Skybite.
Well, no, I mean of the toy.
Oh, what about the difference of them?
Yeah, well, out of the original Robots in Disguise...
Was that first that came out?
The one character that they brought back and updated in a new form was Skybite, out of the whole cast. I mean, here recently they've started, you know, bringing back some of the others, like Scourge and some of them for Japan. But
one would only hope that they liked what either I did or even more the original Japanese series did. Mm. But it was an honor. It was I think one of the weirder characters in R.I.D. And it was because they just, you know, gave me rope to let me. And we were such great people to work with, the guys writing and directing it. We had a blast. You know, so again, fortunate. The other Skybite, terrific. Wherever you are, here we go. We worked. There's plenty of work out there. And you just got to realize that you'll get your time. If you just persevere and do this and stick around for a long time, you'll work.
Yeah.
You know, if you give it up. I tell my students, this is either who you are or what you do. If it's what you do, you're going to have some failures, you're going to have some successes. But in the end, go home to Cincinnati and get married. Your parents miss you. You know, if this is who you are, welcome to your life. I'm 63 doing what I was doing when I was 16. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've had ups and downs. I had a couple of years where I stopped doing it. But this was always who I am. So, again, fortunate, you know, to follow that. And to continue to play, you know, up until 5 years ago when I moved back from L.A., mm-hmm. I thought, well, that's it, I'm done. And no, and that wasn't the case. I'm working more than ever right now. I just got asked to do a spoken word event in New York City called Jesters and Troubadours. That's run by a former student stand-up comic of mine, Jennifer Rawlings, really terrific performer. Directing off Broadway in New York City in the fall. I'm reading plays right now, working with Lung Tree Productions. Maggie Alexander, how are you? I'm reading plays. And I come out to Indiana once a month to teach improvisational comedy and acting.
Fantastic. Yeah, I recall, it was just this past winter, down at the Artcraft Theater, you had, or was it the winter before? You
had
the It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, I directed the radio play stage version of It's a Wonderful Life.
Which I had never seen something. I mean, I'd seen it like in movies or something, mm-hmm. you know, everyone standing at the microphones.
Right.
But to see it firsthand, it was just amazing, because you don't pay attention to the fact that you're looking at people on stage. Your mind wanders and you start visualizing the story and the events, and it still takes you to that other world.
It's a beautiful thing about radio. I mean, you could have sat in that audience that night and just closed your eyes and didn't have to watch the show. You could hear it, and like you said, envision the whole thing. And I had a terrific cast, amalgam of such talented Indiana actors, and some of my students, also talented, mm-hmm. that I was able to mesh into the production.
Sure.
So it was a great one-night experience. And in so it goes, you know. You just keep finding projects you want to be a part of.
Yeah, it was a real treat. And I've got the ticket from that, the ticket stub, still in the Skybyte box here.
Right, because you brought that down that night, I remember. Mm-hmm.
Have you, or do you ever watch the old Robots in Disguise show?
It's hard to find. I could find a copy every now and then on YouTube, mm-hmm. but they don't have a lot of it available. I haven't been able to. I got a whole Transformers thing of RID from England, but I can't play it because it's not Region 1 DVD.
Oh, I see.
You know?
Yeah, the United States never released that series on DVD.
So I want.
I think it might still be under Saban or Disney ownership in some way.
You know, it's echoing like what's going on with Marvel and Sony right now.
Yeah.
I own this character, you own that character, and who gets hurt are you guys? It's the fans. Right. The fans want to see it. The fans in England see it all the time.
Sure, sure.
But I don't watch a lot of myself once I do it. Every once in a while, you know, you'll be sitting home and I'll click on the TV and go, oh, look at that, it's me. You know, and someone will send me a link to something I've done. My students do that a lot and go, I heard you doing this the other day. I went, better look that up. I don't seem to remember it. You know, 25 years, you kind of forget things after a while.
Yeah.
But I don't seek out myself to go watch. And I watch a lot of TV and a lot of movies and animation because I'm teaching it.
Sure.
So I want to stay current to what's going on. Mm-hmm. I know this is not a plug, but Rick and Morty, oh my goodness. I am nuts about Rick and Morty.
Yes.
But Matt Doby, if you're listening to this, Matt, give me a call.
Fantastic. No, as far as those DVDs, though, if I'm not mistaken, I want to say a lot of Blu-ray players now no longer do the region things that DVD players used to.
Really?
So if you've got a Blu-ray player, they might be able to play those discs.
Santa, if you're listening, I need a Blu-ray player for Christmas.
Yes. Yeah. It's worth a shot anyway. Worst that happens, you'll end up with HD quality.
I've spent more money on stupider things, so not a problem.
Right, as have I. As have I. Now, here's something I was wondering. Have we, the Transformers fans, in any way helped your career advance or opened other doors for you that wouldn't have
changed my life? Simon Plum, thank you. He, for a year, tried to get me to Auto Assembly, which is Europe's largest Transformers convention.
Uh-huh.
1,000 people come to these events. And finally, they brought me out in, pardon me on the years, 14? Yeah, 2014 was my first. And I had just been in recovery and was kind of got my life back together. And I was overwhelmed by the love and that they had known the work for so long. And you know, you don't know. You live in a bubble when you record this stuff.
Hmm.
But it was, pun intended, it was a transformational experience. They really showed me so much love. And I spent all 3 days on the floor in the bar with these guys. And, you know, I don't do the celebrity crap. You know, it's like I don't just remove myself. I'm like, hi, I'm Pete from New York. Sit down. Like you said, Mr. Spellos. I went, no, we're going to have none of that.
Well, you said yourself just a moment ago, you're a fan.
I am a fan. You know, and so these people were so genuine and real, and England is just, I just love England. So I went there, and it really started sparking everything again. And I wound up doing a Cinema Wasteland, a thing in Chicago for horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, they were having the last convention of AA before it switched to TF Nation, which is a great group of people who were part of that, who were now running the convention and took it over.
Sure.
And I knew they were going to bring me out. They don't bring guests out back to back. The fans crowdfunded me. Thanks to Jamie Harris. Hi, Jamie. Hi,
Fantastic.
Katie.
Fantastic.
And brought me out to the event. And Simon wound up taking care of me too. And But fans paid for my travel and airfare and food and made sure that I was at the last AA convention. It was, it's humbling, Jim.
Sure.
When you feel that kind of love from people. And from that came, I'm teaching my Transformers family in England now. I've done it twice in the last year. I'm back in 4 months in September. Mm-hmm. And we'll be there in the spring. So twice a year I'll go to my Transformers family. And I love you guys. You changed my life, and you know it. So thank you. To all the Transformers fans, thank you. So I'm doing a love, pal.
Aside from that, do you have anything extra you'd like to say to Transformers fans? Any special messages or
it's
funny
you,
quips?
Not as many funny quips, but it's you that made me relevant again, you know, in the industry when I thought I was going to retire and just kind of walk away from this all. You made me realize that there's a lot of gas left in the tank, and now I just can't get enough of the teaching and the Transformers family and doing this and being able to give it back, you know? I'm in Act 3 of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the time where a lot of people slow it down. But right now, I want to go out there and do as much as I can and inspire people just by being me. And hopefully that inspires people. You can't try and inspire people, but I want to live the life. And I want to make sure that students and young voiceover artists get the support they need to do what I got to do. I had 4 of my students up at ACN in Chicago this weekend auditioning for Bang Zoom, and one of them got a call back.
Wow.
And how great is that? It's their turn. I've had my turn. It's you guys' turn now. So that's what I'm dedicated myself to, making sure that
passing the torch.
Absolutely. The next generation gets it. I got mine. I got a SAG pension. I'm on early Social Security. You know, I don't need to be around the country a lot. I put my time in. And yet, the folks here in Indianapolis and the folks in London and my community in New York, it's really where I want to go. I just want to kind of work once a month with everybody and someday fly off into the sunset. You know, but for right now...
Singing as you go.
Skybite, that's me, of course, that's how I want to go. Singing that last great shot of him flipping up in the air over the water. Someone sent me that picture and I thought, that's just great. You know, I've never met as nice people as I have in the Transformers community. They're real, authentic kids. That was the other thing, Jim. Sitting in the bar at that first convention with people who were 16 and people who were 60, all playing with the Transformers toys.
Sure.
How cool was this? You know, you don't want to be out in that real world. I want to be in that world. I want to be surrounded by people who are still in touch with their childhood. And I think especially the Transformers fans, just get it. Now, their fandom spreads out to all kinds of stuff.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
And stuff that I don't even know about. I'm learning on a dip basis. But I had a little moment in the sun, and that's all I wanted. I wanted to be, you know, I became the man I said I would be when I was young. So, but it's their turn now. That's the great joy of my life, is making sure those dreamers keep dreaming to get the jobs, because I tell them, it's going to be your turn to be me someday, and pass that forward.
Yeah.
And
it reminds me of an old saying, is you don't stop playing because you grow old. You grow old because you stop playing.
Absolutely. And I don't stop playing. As I said, I got a Legion of Superheroes comic book sitting by my computer over there. No, I'll never stop playing. Since I've been doing improv my whole life, you're right. You die when you stop playing. And why? Do what you love. I'm going to look right to all of you listening. Do what you love. Be kind to each other. Love yourself. And don't take any shit from anybody. And go after your dreams, because you can do this. You're going to have a whole mess of people in your life tell you no, as long as you're not one of them, pals and gals. Do this. And, you know, I'm on Facebook. Look me up. Come to Indiana. Take me out for a cup of coffee. Come to New York. Take me out for a bagel. Come to England. We'll go for bangers and mash.
So basically just take a bite out of life.
That's the great line from the movie, oh my God, I'm having a senior moment. Big Night with Stanley Tucci and and Ian Holm and Tony Shalhoub. The line is, you have to bite the life in the ass and drag it to you. You know, and so that's what you really got to do. Take a bite and don't take no for an answer. Right. That's what they taught me.
Well, I just want to go over a few of your more notable roles. See if you
might remember them.
I either remember them or even if you might happen to remember them well enough, maybe even have a fun little story or just
maybe
about it.
If I remember them.
Start off with I'll go ahead and start off with the anime. In the anime Bleach, you played the role of Kogane Hiko.
Nope. See, I was wrong. Okay.
Which was one of the Shiba House Guards.
Okay.
And then an Arrancar, the 103rd Arrancar, is Dordoni Alessandro del Socaccio.
And you think I remember that?
That's like no, 20 it's, letters long.
I have a new respect for you, Jim.
I actually had to go over like four times to figure out how to pronounce it last night before.
Yep.
Just to make sure. What about Dr. Bacchus in Cowboy Bebop?
Hi, Mary Elizabeth McGlynn. How are you? I had a great time. She's one of my dear friends from L.A., and it was... We knew each other so well personally. She says, I have an insane doctor for you. I went, thanks, I'm in. And brought me back in to do Cowboy Bebop, the movie.
Yes.
You're doing a Russian sort of on television.
Yeah,
and
Duchenko, and then also Queen.
Basically, I was doing Harvey Fierstein the whole time. How are you, darling? I'm doing kind of that voice. You know, from Independence Day. I have to call my mother. You know, so that's who I was channeling for that.
I got you. Next we've got Trigun. You played the role of Monev the Gale.
Nope, no clue. I remember playing it, and two of my students have brought it up recently, and I'm going to go online and look at it. So, I guess I was decent. People seem to remember it. What was he? The Gale. Some sort of... It's probably the same guy. This guy, some sort of angry... Militant guard or soldier.
A big dude in like a purple suit with an orange face visor. I had lots of guns.
I had that at home. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay.
The suit, not the guns, of course.
Yeah, he cosplays. It's great.
Yeah. In fact, this is a secret. Shh. But at Indie PopCon this year, I can't make it. But there is a rumor that someone will be cosplaying as me. So I have to say. So if you can cut out to Indie PopCon, which is like July 7th through 9th, it's a terrific thing here in Indianapolis. Come and play, and go meet me. Of course, it's not going to be me, but go meet me.
Now, are you saying cosplaying as Monev the Gale or cosplaying as Peter Spellos?
As Peter Spellos.
Outstanding.
Yeah, it is outstanding. Talk about, my head can't get any bigger at this point.
Well, we'll have to keep an eye out in the crowd for a shark fin going back and forth through the aisles.
Who knows? But I'll let you know as that gets closer to the date.
All right.
Stay in touch with Jim.
One that I wasn't sure of, Macross Plus had you listed as a council member. I'm guessing that was probably just maybe a bit part.
Again, there are no bit parts, only bit actors. Okay. Sometimes they would call you in for pages, and sometimes they would call you in for lines. And,
right.
And it's family. Who am I this time? There's a great Kurt Vonnegut short story from Welcome to the Monkey House called Who Am I This Time? And if you have any aspiration to be an actor, go look that story up. And that's basically what I would say when I would get to one of those rooms. You know, they'll call me up and say, can you work on Friday? I go, yeah, I'm 9 to 11. Perfect. See you then. Didn't tell me what it was. I didn't ask. You just show up and do the work. You know, it's, after a while, this community was so small, everybody knows everybody, and they bring you in. I never worried about any of that. Again, going back to the plenty and enough thing.
Sure, sure.
There's plenty. We have plenty. Look at the pocket table of plenty.
Yeah, no kidding. VHS even.
And that's just not on camera, that's just voiceover. And VHS.
Oh. Street Fighter II, both the animated movie and Street Fighter II V as Sagat.
That's right. That probably shot my throat for about 3 weeks doing all those effects. I think I have like 4 lines of dialogue in that movie, and the rest is fighting effects.
Yeah.
Love it. I mean, how often do you get to go, "Hurt!" and they give you money?
Right.
I know.
Let's see. Next one on here is Code Geass: Lelouch of the Rebellion as Bartley Asprius.
I remember doing that. Kind of a fat, round, bald guy with a thin mustache. Terrific. Had fun with that. Loved doing that series. They brought me back a couple times for it. Mm. You know, again, I was working with such great people over at Magnitude 8 where we used to record, and too many names to mention, and because if I leave 3 off, they'll kill me someday, but
yeah.
Such wonderful people, and Sagat was fun. He was over the top and gruff and angry, and I was doing what I love.
There you go.
25 years ago that I can barely remember.
See, next we've got in the anime Naruto, a character by the name of Hitode.
Funny, I just saw that 2 months ago with a friend's 3 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept watching it and then looking at me. No. They couldn't be, because they knew me as Peter, not as the character. And they, no, that's not you. Well, listen again. So he would do the line, then I would do the line, and they'd go, oh. So the only reason I remember Naruto was because I just saw it with 3 kids between the ages of 4 and 8 a couple months ago.
Fantastic.
I think it's on Hulu. I
think so, yeah. Ghost in the Shell, the original anime, as well as the standalone complex series, different various roles. IMDb didn't specify on that one.
No, there was probably a lot of different stuff.
I think one of them might have been like a guy in a getaway car.
Not a surprise. Always played a lot of thugs in my life, on and off camera. A lot of those guys.
The Big O as Rick Fraser.
Wow. No clue whatsoever.
It's a giant robot.
What a surprise.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I'm very popular with giant robots. But no, the Big O. To me, it's Oscar Robertson played with the Cincinnati Royals, but I'm older than all of you combined up there to actually, for you folks, to know who that is.
Outlaw star, William.
Wendy Lee, I love you. Probably next to Transformers, the greatest fun I ever had doing animation. Because I wasn't playing this guy here. I was playing basically a bad C-3PO impression. And loved it. I loved that I was able to get to do a voice that wasn't what I was normally booked for. And I had no clue about the subsect of Outlaw Star fans as well. And again, working with all those terrific people that did that series, and Wendy, and just great times. Great, great times. And I love Gilliam. Except he became a small pink suppository that looked like Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
What was that? What was that? My friend Catherine Bacon.
Catherine.
In Leeds. Drew me a great picture of Gilliam like that.
Uh-huh.
I have it on my computer next to my Legion of Superheroes books.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Nice. And the last anime one I have on the list here is in the anime Rurouni Kenshin as Senri Otama.
Nope.
No clue.
Not a clue.
Right.
I'll go look at it.
Rurouni Kenshin.
Was I any good?
The Wandering Samurai or Samurai X. It's also called.
Okay. I kind of remember. Do you remember what you were doing in 1992? Me neither.
Sitting in the living room.
All right.
Playing Super Nintendo. All
right. You were young.
Yeah. Bastard. Like, it was like 9.
Bastard.
Okay, and as far as feature film roles, one of my favorite movies as a little kid, and I can't seem to find a copy of it, The Giver, which is based on the manga and anime.
Yes.
had Mark Hamill, and I can't even think of who else.
I'll go through it. I mean, first of all, Brian Usna was the producer, who did Reanimator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I worked with Steve Wang and Screaming Mad George, the two directors. Mm-hmm. Unbelievably creative, these gentlemen are. You will know Wang because he worked helping create Predator and all that stuff, and Screaming Mad. They were visionaries to me. And we must have had 4 or 5 auditions bringing in. And then they would bring in the stunt people to watch us walk because they wanted to do, because our Zoonoids,
yeah,
they wanted to physically look like us because that wasn't us in the suits. You know, that was the stunt guys doing
that. Right.
But I think the only time in motion picture history that you could see the 4 henchmen as Jimmy J.J. Walker, Spice Williams, Michael Berryman, and Peter Spellos. I don't think anybody has ever said those 4 names in the same sentence before. And working with Mark, and it was terrific. We had a blast. Jack Armstrong and Vivian Wu. I mean, it was a pretty terrific cast.
Yeah.
And again, I had no clue what the Guyver was. Of course, Steve and Matt George did, but I kind of caught up to it later.
Mm-hmm.
Fun, you know, and then Steve did the second Guyver, Dark Hero, I think,
yeah,
it was called. But one of those great motion picture experiences, and so much fun. Mm-hmm. We shot a lot late at night, the L.A. River, you know, and the L.A. River, which has like a cup of water in it back in the day. But terrific. Mark was great. I always had fun, Jim. You know, it kind of gets boring unless everything was great. Well, it was, because you get out of it what you put into it.
Absolutely.
You know, if you show up and you have a shitty job and a shitty attitude, you're going to go home feeling shitty. You know, if you show up, 1 line, 100 lines, didn't matter. I was doing what I loved. So, lots of fun with the Guyver. Love the Guyver.
Excellent. Next one I have on here is Men in Black 2 as Captain Larry Bridgewater.
I have more than a special place in my heart. Because, I'm forgetting names now. The director that I went to elementary school with. Not Barry. Barry directed Adam's Family. Somebody call me up right now and tell me who the director... I'm going to have to look
it up. Or post it in the comments.
But I went to elementary school with... kids, this is called a pre-senior moment. Where your mind goes absolutely blank on someone's name that the minute the camera goes off, I'm going to remember. It was terrific. It was on the Sony set. It was really weird because it was right around 9/11. That it was getting filled. So they actually shut it down and we wound up going back to work afterwards. There was a cash change from the woman who played was in Twin Peaks, who Lara Flynn Boyle, who took over the role. It was Famke Janssen who was supposed to play that role. But on the set, Barry, it's right there. I hate myself, by the way. On the Sony lot, terrific time. Will Smith was terrific to work with. First of all, taller than me, and he had just done Ali. He was, and with muscles. This guy was strong. Nicest guy. We had a blast. We improvised the scene a little bit. I mean, how often do you get to see 2.5 subway cars literally built in the Sony, you know, on the Sony sound stages? I had an audition for the first Men in Black. Here's the story that you want. I had auditioned for the first Men in Black movie. I was literally one of the first non-stars hired. I was supposed to play a bartender, and David Rubin was the casting director. And David, thank you for casting me 1,000 times. And in the bar, it was when Tommy Lee brings Will in, and it's the first time he's introducing him to an alien. I played a bartender whose face opens up, and there's a little alien inside.
Yeah.
Well, the script went through like 20 script changes, and that character became the jeweler with the little thing in the face.
Uh-huh.
But they brought me into Rick Baker to do a head cast. If you don't know who Rick Baker is, look him up. He was the greatest contemporary makeup special effects person, hands-on. It was like an honor to sit in his chair. And literally, he did the first test on me. And here I am sitting in Rick Baker's chair. Look him up, kids. I was honored. And they did a whole head cast of me. And believe me, you haven't lived until 3 weeks later you walk in and you see your head on a stick. So they wound up, it wound up changing. So I worked, they paid me, and, but I never was in the movie. And once the strip changed. So when they did the second one, David and I think Rhona Kress was casting the second one, who worked with David, brought me back in because they know the work. And at the audition, I nailed it. I can't believe, I can't remember, not Nemiroff, it was, nope, severe pre-senior moment. But anyway, we hit it off so well because we were talking about PS-173 in New York, and he was a year older than me. And must have went on for 5 minutes, even before the audition. Great audition that did a couple of Larry's lines, and by the time I got home, I had booked it. You know, they said,
not quite,
hey, Peter, you're in. They know. You know, it would just, they know right away whether they like you or don't. And because of my connection with the director, it was, you know, it was like going to work for family. I mean, imagine 1965, 66, you're a kid in fifth grade and you're a kid in sixth grade at a small, in a New York City public school, and 40 plus years later, you're on the sixth grader's set, the fifth grader's now acting in his movie. It's a teeny world. It's an old saying, there's only 8 people in show business and 5 of us know each other. And that's how that works. But Men in Black, blessed to have worked on Men in Black too. Mm-hmm. And they actually talk about me on the, if you have the DVD with the director's commentary, they talk about that whole thing and going to elementary school and
really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so if you play the director's cut on the DVD, you'll hear them talk about me.
Fantastic. And the last one I have on the feature films list is Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
Oh my God. Another.
It's Tracy's father.
Well, I got a couple stories about that. First, working with Rachel Talalay, the director, terrific, terrific director. You'll know her now from directing a lot of the great Doctor Who episodes from the last 2 seasons. Sherlock, you know, she's just terrific. And wound up playing this really, I turned into Freddy Krueger. I mean, how iconic can that be?
Yeah.
It was, again, second time they had to do a head cast of me, and they took 3 guys, 3 hours to get me into that prosthetic face-stretching makeup. And I remember being, 2 stories, I remember being in the makeup room, and they had a documentary crew there. And they wanted to film Robert. And Robert comes out and goes, and you know, I've done this 1,000 times, still talk to Peter. You know, and literally. So they interviewed me a couple times. And then Robert, in full Freddy regalia, you know, over in the makeup room with the Freddy fingers, going through the donuts. Like this, is there any crawlers left? And got the Freddy fingers just moving the donuts around. I thought, I will never forget that. I did the scene with Leslie Dean, terrific actor. Nobody would talk to me on the set because it was the abusive father. I was seducing my daughter in the nightmare. I mean, I'm getting creepy thinking about it, and I've only watched it like 1 or 2 times since I recorded it. I'll send you some stills that I have from it. Really creepy. Until you see that shot that turns around, there's a fat arm with the Freddy sweater on it. Uh-huh. And again, this wonderfully iconic moment. So she beats the shit out of me with a percolator. Just a great experience. Years later, and again, after the whole thing, everybody's friendly. Leslie was terrific. And again, Rachel, I know if you never hear this, but I'm so thrilled with all your success. You're a terrific director, and thank you for casting me. I'm in an elevator in an audition in Hollywood. And I walk in, and a woman is kind of right behind me, and I hold the door, and she walks in. And it's a big Hollywood building, maybe 6 floors, you know, we're going up in. I'm being facetious. There.
Sure.
And we're having kind of this moment in the elevator, and we kind of look over and smile and nod at each other. Kind of look back, and we both smile and nod. And I finally go, look, I'm trying not to be creepy, but I swear to you, I think, have we met somewhere before? And she goes, I was thinking the same. Oh my God, you're my abusive father. Peter, Leslie, big hug. Hello, how are you? And I've only recently reconnected with Leslie Dean on Facebook, so it's been, I put up some pictures to show her. But it was this great Hollywood Babylon moment. I was so fortunate that there was nobody else in the elevator for some blonde woman to scream, oh my God, you're my abusive father. But that's my favorite movie from Nightmare on Elm Street 6.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned earlier, you doing the improv workshops. Here in Indianapolis, you do those monthly, isn't it?
Monthly. I do downtown Indy. I teach, sometimes I'll teach a business of acting class on a Friday night, but I'll do an improv weekend intensive, 5 hours on a Saturday, 12 to 5 on Sunday, the same thing. And then Monday and Tuesday night, I do 3 hour acting classes, which are more audition skills where they get a script, they got 20 minutes to look at it, they come and they do it with me. I give them adjustment and do it again. I take them through the audition process. And I'm a very, very, I don't want to say I have an agenda with it, but actually I have no agenda. It's like stop acting. Stop acting. Look at me. Make a connection. How does the person feel in the scene? And let the camera do the work. Make the connection with your partner. You know, and that's what I'm trying to teach them. So when they walk into that audition, they're not scared, like, I got to get the job. They know that their job is the audition. And just to stay focused, and the camera will see all that. With the improv, it's physical and on its feet. And by the time, I don't know when this is going to air, but I think we might be doing an improv show for all these guys at the end of July here in Indianapolis. It's not set in stone yet, but check your local listings.
Yes.
But it's great. So once a month I'm out here. You can actually look at my Facebook page and anybody out there and contact me or contact me through Jim. But yeah, I'm set for 5 more times till the end of the year here in Indiana. And it's usually every month or every 6-7 weeks. I do 9 months out of the year. It works out. I'm here 9 times. And then in London twice a year doing this with the Transformers family. Improvicons, how are you? I miss you and Jaffa Cakes, and I can go on and on about that. Anyway, I am back.
Excellent. All right. And we'll, as we hear, whatever dates that you have set for those, we'll update the TFYLP viewers as well.
Absolutely.
That way, if they want to maybe check those out if they're in the area.
And feel free to, follow me on Twitter at @PSpellos. Or Facebook, and I'd love to speak to you guys, because like I said, you've made me relevant again, and we're all in this together, gang. All right?
Yes. All right. I just have one last thing.
Sure.
That friend of mine, he messaged me and asked me if you would be willing to read a haiku, a Skybite.
As long as you don't mind Skybite wearing glasses, I'm fine with that.
And another one with that. There we are. Hope you can make on that chip and scratch.
Arlen Johnson, this is for you. By land, seer air, my mighty countenance shines, for I am Skybite. Arlen, thanks for caring.
All right. Well, I want to thank you again for sitting down with me, Peter.
My pleasure, pal.
And thank you for all that you've done and all that you continue to do.
And thank you, fans, for loving us so much. You are probably the greatest fan community that I have ever seen. Thank you.
We appreciate that. We appreciate you. I want to also remind our viewers, check out our sponsors, CapturePrey.com. Hey, these guys. Great toys, great prices, great service. CapturePrey.com. Get free shipping with orders of $150 or more. Check out Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection, minimize your cost with Mega Toy Fan. And our newest sponsor, Ripped Apparel. Check them out. Use the code TFYLPPOD at checkout and save, I believe, 10% off your order. With that, this has been Jim Black and
Skybite, that's me.
Thanks for joining us, gang.
Thanks.
Make sure to check out the TFYLP podcast Saturday nights at 8 o'clock.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.